Mr. Atkind, Reel 7. Mr. Atkind, you were just telling me about the children being loaded onto the lorries during the curfew.
Shall I carry on about that?
Yes, please.
Just shortly before that, two of the doctors were shot. I don't know why. They might have not reacted quickly enough to satisfy the German. The nurses were taking the younger children. Suddenly the children began to cry and sort of panicked. And two of the men from the Royal Commando shot into the crowd of the children. And there was immediately silence. And the two little corpses were also put on the lorry. And then the back of the lorry was closed, and the two German from the Royal Commando, I remember seeing them, they sat astride on the upper part of the wooden part of the lorry. It was open top, with their feet dangling down, and raised their faces so as to sun because it was a very sunny September day, and the lorry pulled away. Then a few hours later, another lorry pulled up to take more.
How many children do you think would be on a lorry?
I know that at that time 16,000 people, young and old, were taken out of the ghetto. And after that, there were very, very few children in the ghetto and very, very few old people in the ghetto.
These Royal Commanders, they were the soldiers who were driving the lorries?
They were soldiers, just different uniforms, sort of brown uniforms instead of green uniforms.
See? They were Germans?
Yeah.
Did people have any idea where the children were being taken? Were there any rumours as to what was going to happen to the children? I mean, nobody could believe that they were going to be taken to a work camp. They were so young.
No, nobody believed. I remember just as when the children were shot and they were being taken away, a young rabbi was seen walking, in spite of the curfew, walking and shouting loudly, "There is no God." It was quite a moving scene. Then the following day, I was sent to another place in the ghetto, which was an old people's home. And there were men and women who couldn't walk anymore. They looked very old to me. They might have been 70, 80. Maybe some of them were younger. And again, because I had my green cap, they would ask me, help me to get out of here, let me go from here. And they wanted to give me the wedding ring, some of the women. And I said, as far as I'm concerned, you are free to go. I'm not stopping you. I'm not going to stop you if you want to go. But they were unable to raise themselves. They were lying in the straw. Dozens, well, don't know how many hundreds in that building.
There were no beds.
No, on the ground floor, I remember there was straw. They were lying in the straw, and they were unable to, I don't know if they got any food or not, but no one was stopping them, but they were being brought into the building, also selected and brought to that building. And then at night, I remember a lorry came and was going to take them from that place to the hospital, which was maybe 3 miles away. and they're being loaded by like ambulance men, people who worked for the hospital. And those that were strong enough, that could walk away, could run away, were able to do so, because even the Jewish policemen wouldn't care to stop them. But they were actually unable to. They were not strong enough to get away.
Was there any rumors amongst the old people as to where they might be going and what was going to happen to them? Did people just not
People
want to
don't
think about
want to
it?
Know. People didn't. I don't think there were no discussions. There was the things was just it was a nightmare. You were watching, observing a nightmare.
Where did you think they were going? They must have known they were going to something not very pleasant if they wanted to escape. Where did you think they were going?
I didn't think that they were going to be gassed, because what happened later, they were taken into special vans. This was not Auschwitz. The evacuation went to Chełmno, and they were taken into gas, and monoxide was sort of the exhaust from the fumes from the lorries were pumped into the...
Where was this?
That was in Chełmno. That was north of Lodz.
How did you know
but
that?
But that we knew about after the war. But at the time, I don't think you had... You see, it's difficult to describe the atmosphere that existed at that time. Most Nobody wanted to leave the ghetto. People were afraid to leave the ghetto, however terrible it was. But although you were starving, and those people you knew, they didn't stand a chance. We see, if they were in the ghetto, they would have survived another 2-3 months. But you didn't think, well, I didn't at least, oh, well, they're going to be murdered a day or 2 days later.
Did you know of Chełmno?
Hmm?
Did you already know of Chełmno?
No, I didn't know about it. There were rumors, and there were, as I mentioned, the soap that came to the ghetto.
Was there rumors of gassing?
No, not at that time. That I found it a little bit later, but not at that time. I didn't hear yet about gassing.
What would the rumours be then, besides the soap?
Well, shooting, of course, were taking place before the ghetto, so it didn't need much imagination that those people might be shot. But I don't remember sort of thinking about it.
Why do you think they killed the gypsies, all 5,000 of them, within the ghetto, and yet took the Jewish people out to kill them?
I don't really know why. In the ghetto, people were dying quite quickly. Those that were working appeared to be sort of the Germans needed those people to work in the various places. I can describe the places that were in the ghetto. Why did they bring the gypsies and murder them in the ghetto and then take other people out of the ghetto to be murdered somewhere else? I don't know. I cannot answer that.
What was the atmosphere like in the ghetto after this curfew?
The curfew came to an end after 8 days, and by then 16,000 were sent out, and life came back to normal. That was, I was sort of very surprised. Suddenly, out of a population of 120 or 130,000, 16,000 disappear, children and old people, and the hospitals were evacuated. And yet, immediately afterwards, everyone went back to work as if nothing had happened.
Had most people not seen what went on? And if there were a curfew?
Well, lots of people lost their children, brothers and sisters and parents and grandparents and so on and so on. So obviously those people suffered terribly, but it wasn't sort of so visible. It wasn't a sort of a... It was suffering in silence. My sister managed to run away from the orphanage, which was then evacuated, and she came and we lived together in the room, and she found a job in a tailoring establishment.
Had many children run
away? Yes. By then, well, she was anybody who could run away. Well, I was on one lorry, on one, not lorry, but a horse-driven cart with a Jewish policeman. And we were, that cart, there were about 30 people who were selected to be taken to the hospital. And half of them couldn't move, couldn't run away. But there was a young woman with a baby in her arm. And suddenly, and the cart was going quite slowly through the streets, and there was a curfew on, when suddenly a man appeared. And I realized he was the husband of the woman with the child. And he managed to grab her while she was holding the baby. And the Jewish policeman was trying to chase him away, who was on the cart as well, and I was there. And somehow the man managed to pull his wife off the cart, but the baby fell out of her hands and was left in the van. And the man and his wife escaped, young couple, and the policeman started shouting at me, saying, now we are going to get into trouble, because there were 30 people, and now I've got only 29. We will now get into trouble. And I somehow listened to him, and I jumped off the cart myself and disappeared.
Why?
And nothing happened.
What did you think he was going to do?
First of all, he might have had orders. You see, later I found out much more about it. At the time, I didn't realize what was going on. I didn't have children. I didn't have anybody. My sister was at the orphanage, and she managed to run away later and rejoined me. But the Jewish policemen were... Their families were protected at that time, their children. And they were told that so long as they, by Rumkowski and by the Germans and whoever, that their children will not be evacuated, provided that they help in the evacuation. But if they don't, then their children will be taken as hostages or whatever and also sent out. And I wasn't aware of it at the time, why this policeman was so excited, so worked up about it. But I simply decided, no one knows my name, I'm supposed to be on that van, but the whole thing is in such chaos, I just slipped away and ran away.
Did you think he might replace the one missing with you?
No, no. I wasn't afraid of that. On the other hand, there was a danger because he was blaming me for not helping him. There was a danger, but I didn't run away because I was afraid for my own safety. I ran away simply as if I didn't want to have anything to do with it.
That's how
I went to the another hospital. I could walk anywhere because of my cap and my badge. I could walk anywhere, get a little bit of food, meet someone else from the post office, find out what was going on. I could see what was happening, the selections, observe the selections. And I had more food because I was in a kind of a privileged position and yet without any specific duty for those 8 days and nights. I didn't sleep those 8 nights, nobody. It was just, well, maybe now and then I would lay down for an hour somewhere in the hospital on a bench. But it was a question of going from place to place, eating something, talking to a friend who said, oh, the selection has already taken place in that part, but it's all right on the other side of the ghetto, let's go to the other side, and that sort of thing. But I noticed a few selections which were quite frightening.
Were you worried about your sister?
I was worried about my sister. I went to Marysin, and by then the orphanage was already evacuated, but then she appeared. She said she managed to run away. Because anybody sort of, say, 15, 16, who was strong enough could run away. It wasn't so difficult.
What point during this 8-day curfew did you realize your sister had got away?
Halfway through or closer towards the end.
She arrived at your accommodation?
She came. She just arrived and said, I've managed to run away. But I noticed some terrible scenes where the chief of the Gestapo, Fuchs, he was, I remember when in one tenement all the people came down for selection. So the younger people were less afraid, and one of the young men sort of came in front, you know, more or less confident he's not going to be selected. Fuchs took out his revolver and told him to kneel. I was sort of maybe 20 yards away, and I could see it very clearly. And the man went on his knees, and then Fuchs sort of hesitated, holding the gun, and said, get up, turn round, now kneel, and then started counting, 1, 2, 3, and slowly walked away and left the man, didn't shoot him, but it was just kind of playing with him, and walked away to some other block of buildings where they rounded up some other people for selection. And later on, after dark, when the selection for the day was finished, we went to see him. The man was in bed. He was a young man, healthy. But he was a nervous, he was shaking, and he was so frightened. Fuchs was the chief of the Gestapo. The other man was nicknamed the Boxer. He was a Volksdeutsch, who was a boxer, amateur boxer before the war, big man with a boxer's nose. And he was going with an automatic gun, and he did a lot of killing during those 8 days.
What, just shooting people?
Shooting people. People who... Usually because somebody tried to run away. There were, you know, somebody running immediately was, people were would begin to run simply because they were afraid. And I was near where he shot quite a few people. And I don't want to talk about the trial now, which took place after the war. No? I was a witness at his...
For boxer?
The boxer. I was a witness at his trial, but I wasn't after the war, 1980 or 81, in Bochum, near Düsseldorf in West Germany. But I was not able to say that I actually saw him pull the trigger. But in the ghetto, everyone, immediately some shooting took place, the news spread very quickly, and people would say immediately, oh, the boxer has killed someone else again, or the boxer is shooting.
Why was his trial in 1981? Had he been in...
I don't know. I found they found he was working somewhere in... he was a retired worker somewhere in West Germany, and somehow they found out some information about him. He was in the Gestapo. He was much lower than Fuchs. Now, Fuchs was the chief.
What happened to Boxer at the trial?
I think the trial went on, because I read in the Jewish Chronicle later on that some other witnesses from Australia went to another trial. So I think that went on for many, many years. What happened eventually, I have no idea. I identified him from photographs, because I couldn't recognize him after so many years. After the curfew, what happened? My sister got a job at the tailoring establishment, and by then virtually everybody in the ghetto was working. Now, I'll tell you a little bit about the various workshops. There was a laundry, on my round, there was a laundry establishment, very big, and uniforms which were splattered with blood and with bullet holes would arrive in lorries, vast quantities, and they were washed, repaired, and pressed and sent back. And that was... many women worked in those laundries, and men. Then there was another place called the Strohabteilung. The straw boots were being made, huge straw boots for guards who stood for hours in snow. Again, many women were working in those, making those big boots. Then there was the leather Abteilung, leather workshop, where men were making shoes for the Germans. Another place where people were making gloves and scarves. Then there was the metal Abteilung, where all kinds of metal objects were being produced. So there were many workshops, and Rumkowski believed, and many people around him believed, that if the Jews in the ghetto would work and be useful to the Germans will allow them to live for as long as they are useful. And there was some truth in it. Also, the food the ghetto received a little bit of food because of the work in exchange for the products. And because of Rumkowski and the people around him who urged everyone to work, the ghetto lasted longer, the Lodz ghetto lasted longer than any other ghetto.
What were the working conditions like? How long a day would people work?
Very well, very long hours.
What time would they have to be there?
I think it varied, but probably from 8 o'clock to till 6 or 7. Very long hours, 6 days a week, I think. It might have varied from place to place.
Did they get lunch breaks?
There was the lunch break, and there was the main thing. It wasn't the few marks that they got, because money was sort of didn't mean much. The main thing was the soup, the portion of soup that you got. But in spite of it, they were starving, and many people were dying from starvation and TB.
Were there some places that people preferred to work in than others?
Of course. The best were the communal kitchens. Anything to do with food was the best.
How did people get jobs in them places? Was there great competition?
There was competition. You had to have protekcja, was the word. It's not protection, it's not the right interpretation. It's influence. If someone knew somebody, if someone knew close to Rumkowski, they knew somebody, they would get the better jobs. My work at the post office was, comparatively speaking, quite good, but I didn't have very much more food. The food was there only because of the watches that my uncle left me. But what happened, although I still had hundreds of them, and although I sold so many already, I was afraid of the Kripo. I was terrified that if anyone would find out that I've got a few hundred watches, silver watches and others, they would, if they found them, they would be convinced that I also had some gold and diamonds and all kinds of other things. And I lived then in fear of the Kripo. And
how did your sister manage for food?
We shared. I would organize a little more. She also had another soup. We were hungry, but we just managed to scrape through.